Good afternoon. This is Reed Rosenthal, your host of The Land Patriot, and today we have a great show from California, and we have two folks who have lots to add to your understanding about land, how that land affects you, no matter where it's located, and how when one person's rights are eroded relative to land, all persons' rights are eroded relative to land, not to mention how things like that dig into your pocketbook. And we're talking to Don Rickey out of Red Bluff, California. He's with Martinez Realtors, and his URL is www.martinez.com. And we're also talking with Billy Long, whom I've known for many years. He's with Rocky Mountain Ranch Marketing Associates. And, in fact, if you go to Ranch Marketing Associates, just put in Google. Those guys have done a great job. They'll come up like number one, two, and three. See, Billy, I got you off the hook on your URL there.
There you go. Thanks.
No problem.
It's Ranch Marketing Associates. And if you just type in ranches for sale, you'll get it on Google, too. But our URL, Reed, is rmabrokers.com. And, of course, yeah, we will come up at the head of almost every search, and there's a lot of ranches on there. So we work all over the western United States, and so there's almost $400 million worth of ranches on that on our website.
Yeah, and some pretty ones too, I might add. And
there are
for folks who want to look me up, it's reedlrosenthal.com, and that will tell you a little bit about me. And www.ranchesofthewestinc.com. So you listeners have all sorts of fun things to look at with lots of pretty pictures, I might add. But we have pretty serious business to talk about today, because California is unfortunately, I'm sorry about that, California, a bellwether state in terms of trends. And sometimes those trends are good, and sometimes those trends are not so good. As you know, the last several months, we've talked to people from all over the country, and they've all had kind of the same alarming story, maybe couched in different terms and maybe slightly different facts. But in the end, the bottom line is that government on every level is covertly and overtly interfering with property use, property rights, and land rights, and it's affecting your pocketbook and it's affecting your land. And we all have a stake in this. There is no such thing as, gee, it's happening to the other guy. If it happens to one person, it happens to all of us. I'm going to lead off the conversation by asking Billy about this really fascinating thing called the Williamson Act, which I hadn't even heard about till today. And Billy, why don't you explain that to folks, what exactly that is, that special animal in California?
Well, in California, and Don can help me on this, he's even more familiar than I am. The Williamson Act is a tax relief act that was initiated that taxes agriculture at one-fifth of the normal tax rate. So, in California, that's the 1% tax rate. If you pay $10 million for a property, your taxes would be $100,000 a year. The Williamson Act, if you put your property into it, and it's something you elect to put a property in there, and it's for 10 years, then you're taxed at one-fifth of that rate, which means, you know, your taxes would be $20,000 a year. So it's very imperative to the agriculture community in California. You know, that makes a huge difference in your profitability if you're operating a cattle ranch or mostly a cattle ranch, but as well any sorts of growing crops as well. But
sure, and the bottom line, I mean, you know, some people would obviously go out of business because agriculture and cattle, as the three of us well know, is just a tough business to begin with, even with everything going right. But in the end, those many ranches which would make do would have to do what? They're going to have to raise the prices of the commodities they sell, whether it's the meat they're shipping, or the vegetables that they're growing. I mean, they're going to have to raise it that $80,000 in your example, right?
Well, you know, in theory, you're right. But the fact is, it's just that those ranchers will go out of business because someone's going to be profitable somewhere. You have to compete on a national basis. So, you know, in theory, yes, you're right. In order to make it profitable, you would have to raise the prices. But one rancher or California ranchers can't raise the price unilaterally of beef across the nation. It's still a supply and demand and a competitive market. So it just causes, it just means it's uneconomically feasible for a rancher in California to compete with someone in Colorado.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
And Reed, this is Don. The Williams Act also is designed to hold agricultural lands in agriculture rather than development. We're in a heavy development state, and a lot of our better lands are easy to develop, and it takes it out of food production. And so the Williams Act is also designed to set those aside for that period of time. You go in for 10 years, it renews itself automatically each year. And then in high-quality row crop land, there's a super Williamson Act that's a 20-year commitment now. But it also keeps it from development. There's a minimum size.
That's a laudable goal. But if you step back and look at it, the state basically is funding that, I don't want to call it a shortfall, that reduction in property tax, right?
Yeah, they call those subvention funds. They give the counties the difference between, or on some ratio, they give the counties money that they've lost by lands going into the Williamson Act.
Okay, and so for the folks who are sitting in on listening to this from all across the country, the bottom line is that, you know, the counties collect tax revenues, property tax revenues, from all of us, no matter where we live, and they use those to provide basic county and local services, and, of course, some goes to the schools, et cetera. So in California's case, the state has stepped in and said, hey, counties, we want to, number one, protect ag land, a laudable goal, and number two, we want to give agriculture a break if it meets certain requirements for a certain amount of years. And to the extent that those lower your tax revenues, counties, the state's going to write you a check. Is that basically how it's working?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. And then, and so the state is writing the county a check. And I want to follow this kind of through to its conclusion here with the two of you. But in California, I think you guys are $18 billion underwater, right?
Yeah, we're broke, and these subvention funds are in jeopardy. It's a hot topic all through agriculture right now, whether the state's going to be able to sustain it.
Don, you wouldn't happen to know just roughly how much in the subvention funds the state has been funding, let's say on the average over the last 3, 4, 5 years? Would you know?
You know, I don't. It's you know, the heavy ag counties, it's huge. Our Northern California counties, a lot of them are grazing lands, and you know, it's much less impact. But it's a large amount of money. And
would you happen to know, is it in the hundreds of millions or is it in the low billions?
You know, I don't know. It could get into the billion range. It's very substantial, and it's the only way a guy can hold a place together and not have to sell it to pay the taxes. You know, you can't generate enough income from your agricultural aspects to pay the 1% tax in California if they were assessing.
Let me ask a question. I'm going to ask the two of you, so feel free, either one of you, to answer it. But if in other states almost all states have some kind of agricultural exemption for property tax. I mean, Montana does, Wyoming does, Colorado does, the Midwest does. I know certain of the New England states and southeastern states do. Why in California particularly would it mean that the ag businesses would basically have a shipwreck if that money was removed? What What is creating the increased operating costs for ag and cattle operations in California that you don't find in other places right now? Is it cost of operations? Is it unions? Is it just the cost of state operations and government, the cost of other taxes, the cost of goods and services? What's your opinion?
Well, I feel it's right across the board. Everything is so much more expensive that if you added a huge tax burden on top of it, you know, it would increase our food costs just incredibly.
Do you think that heightened level of prices in California are due, let's say, 30%, 60%, or 90% due to the policies, rules, regulations, and restrictions of a government, whether it's state, local, or federal? Or do you think that there's other things at play?
Well, it's not free flowing. You know, it's not. It's so regulated that it's not a simple supply and demand and free flowing situation. Would be my opinion.
Billy, do you agree with that?
You've got a lot of government intervention in California for sure. The government owns most of the mineral rights. The water in California is an issue. Availability of water for irrigation, which has always been an issue in California. And then, of course, I think the difference between the Williamson Act and a lot of other states is the Williamson Act. I mean, in other states, it's not an option. If you have agricultural land, you get that tax deduction. And it's not a county by county, and it's not something you elect to, it's generally not in jeopardy. I don't know that in other states that it's subsidized so much by the state. It is ultimately money that the state is not getting in taxes, but the way that California is structured with the Williamson Act, where it is county by county, and it comes out of the county coffers, but the state doesn't put it in, then the county loses money. It's a little more unique in California, I believe.
All right, good. Well, those are great descriptions, guys. You know, and if we close the loop on this part of our conversation, so step one, California has decided they want to offer incentive not to develop, which is good. Number two, California has a host of other regulations on a lot of different levels and a lot of different fields which have increased the cost of living, the cost of production, the cost of operation, the cost of transportation, which makes California goods and services, land-related goods and services, more expensive than most other states and therefore not competitive unless the same government that created the regulations and the uneven playing field for California land-related businesses steps back in and funds those businesses through tax relief like we're talking about using the rest of the taxpayers' money. I mean, bottom line, that's what's happening.
Well, I mean, but, you know, it's a two-edged sword, Reed. I mean, on the one hand, the government is stepping in to help farmers by keeping their costs low, and on the, you know, so you know, which is it? And if they remove that, if the government were to step out, then your costs are going to go up anyway. So
no, I agree with you 100%. My point is that the farmers need the level of help they do in California, because the other rules and regulations and policies of California related to land use, you name it, across the board, have created such high costs that this is one cost that the government can kind of give back on. But the bottom line is, if the operating costs for the farmers and ranchers in California were more or less in sync with, let's say, the Rocky Mountain states, the Midwest states, the Southeast, then the government the California government would not have to step in to the extent that it is to subsidize the property taxes. Did you follow what I'm saying? They've created the atmosphere where they have to step in and once again kind of tamper in the market. It's kind of like what Don was saying. You know, it's not a free-flowing market system.
Well, I don't think it is in any state. I don't think you can single out California. I mean, look at the CRP programs and the subsidies that farmers have been getting throughout the years. These are government subsidies to help agricultural production. It's been going
Absolutely.
On for a long time.
No, but those are federal subsidies that basically, you know, that basically anybody can qualify for. I mean, CRP, you know, the WIP programs, the EQIP programs, et cetera. In fact, we use some of them on our places. But that's a level playing field. I mean, you can qualify for those whether you're farming potatoes in Maine or tobacco in Kentucky. As a matter of fact, you do better with tobacco in Kentucky. Or, you know, beets in California or, you know, grass hay in Montana. The point I'm trying to make is that levels of government regulation, even in areas which are not land-related, have increased the costs of land operation for agricultural and cattle operations. And the government in California has recognized that, and they've stepped in with this, you know, pretty significant tax relief for ag, which, listen, I think that they're stepping in is great. The point is, if they didn't have all the other stuff going on, which put their farmers and ranchers at a disadvantage in operating their land, they wouldn't have to step into that same extent. It's kind of like a spiral.
Right, but that's also the responsibility or the result of a free economy. I mean, you know, land prices dictate a lot of that. You know, land prices in Colorado, you know, at $2,500 acre versus, you know, land prices in California at $1,500 an acre, you know, that equalizes a lot of that. There's a lot of factors that factor
yeah.
in there.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. That's a really good point, Billy, because the land is generally far more expensive in California, and that's a base cost going in, no doubt about it. All right. Well, listen, that really kind of intrigued me when we talked about it before the show. And the other thing that intrigued me, and you both talked to me about it, is that in California, a lot of the mineral rights are owned by the state, which is, in my experience, relatively unusual. You know, in a lot of the western and midwestern states, I'm not familiar with the southeast. Next week we're going to be interviewing somebody actually from Alabama, so that should be interesting. But, you know, they're either privately owned or they're federally owned. But in the case of California, from what I'm hearing from you two guys, is that California has a lot of the mineral rights underlying ground. Is that right?
Well, I take the it is federally owned, isn't it? I mean, you see, California was settled in basically during the gold rush. And so, you know, that was the whole deal. So there's so much of the mineral rights that were reserved by the feds, and I'm not so much state, I'm misspoken there. So I think just in California, when you go across the title report, Don, wouldn't you agree there's, you know, generally 50% of all the mineral rights out here are owned by the feds?
Billy, I'd argue with you on that a little bit. Back when, you know, they did the homestead patents where most of this land passed from the federal government to private hands, if there was coal or known minerals, then the government did withhold some mineral rights. But by and large, in California, ranch country, we don't have a lot of minerals. And so it's not quite the tussle over mineral rights, you know, splitting them in half every time it sells and whatever. A lot of times the minerals will go with it, whatever the private holding has. And there may be some underlying, they're old government rights that appear in title that, you know, but they generally go back to coal and things that they were concerned with back in the, you know, these patent times in the mid-18 to late 1800s, most most of this land transferred with patents. And so it's not, I don't think the government mineral right thing is a real big deal, you know, it, by and large. And generally, you know, our minerals, we don't have so much oil and whatever, at least in the north part of the state, that the they don't tussle over the mineral rights quite as much as they do in other places. But the government isn't a real big part of it.
So the bottom line is that the state doesn't own that much mineral rights. They are, like other states, both federal and private. That kind of
I think that's correct.
And help the folks listening when Don is talking about the homesteads and homestead patents. You know, long ago, when the spirit of America was really kind of ascending, what would happen is that people could stake claims, generally in what's called quarter sections, 160 acres. And they would have to work those. They would have to work those claims. They would have to farm them, whatever it happened to be, and they would get title after a period of time, and that's called the homestead. And there was actually a Homestead Act way back when. And in many of those cases, the government, the only thing that the folks didn't get with their land, they got every other right, but they did not get the minerals that were underneath the land. Correct, Don?
Yeah, not in all cases. But
there are always exceptions to every rule, particularly if you happen to know the local judge. That was typically how it happened. So when we're talking about homesteads and homestead patents, the patents are the mineral rights that the federal government would withhold for itself, even though you got your 160 acres or your 40 acres and a mule for free. Just out of curiosity, guys, you know, there's pretty good exploration, pretty good. It's being fought in a bunch of states. There's pretty good exploration and mineral usage of federal rights or leasing of federal rights in a lot of the Rocky Mountain states, as Billy well knows. A lot of his operations are in the Rocky Mountains. And one of the things you have to look out for, and Billy, break in if you disagree, is, you know, who owns the mineral rights underneath your land, who's leased them, you know, whether you can have a gas well or an oil rig sitting outside your house, whether somebody can mine gravel out of your creek. I mean, there's all sorts of things to kind of look for. But it's my impression, and I don't know that much about it, which is why I'm asking you to, it's my impression that in California, there's not a lot of that. I mean, a lot of the federal mineral rights are going completely untapped. What do you think, Don?
I'm not real conversant about Southern California, but Northern California, absolutely. You know, it's there's just not much exploration. We've got some gas, you know, that they're working on a little bit, but no, it's it is pretty much untapped. And probably,
is that primarily because of governmental or social pressures to not develop it?
I'm not aware of a lot of social pressures not to. I know that our California coastline, there's tremendous pressures, but inland in the ranch country, I'm not aware of so much.
And well, you have a large green movement in California. You've got a primarily Democratic state, and you've got a lot of pressure, you know, not to develop, you know, minerals, as you know, on the coastline. And I don't know a lot about that, but, you know, what's going on the coastline. But anytime you have that much public awareness and public outcry to not develop minerals, it makes it a little tough.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's substantial.
You know, we were talking a little bit before the show about the fact that Exxon Mobil and a consortium of oil companies have tried for years to lease the offshore rights from California for oil and gas production, both deep sea and shallow. And the numbers that I saw just a few months ago was either $42 or $52 billion. I mean, when you start getting in that amount, what's $10 billion? that they would pay over a pretty condensed number of years for the lease rights to the state for the right to explore and extract, you know, hydrocarbons from the seabed. And of course, California has adamantly opposed that. In the meantime, we were talking also before the show, and you guys have a, you know, $16 to $18 billion budget deficit, and there's things which could arguably be called beneficial, like what we were talking about with the Williams Act, that preserve agricultural land that may go by the wayside. And in the meantime, you have this huge treasure sitting off your coasts. You know, what are people's feelings about that? What are your feelings about that?
I'd say good luck. I mean, here you got, I mean, I think probably Californians would rather die broke and green than tap that resource. That's going to be a fight. I don't know, you know, what politician is going to want to take on that issue to be the one that gave up the rights of the California coast with potential, you know, oil spills. That would be a touchy subject.
Well, it'd be tough politically. I'd love to see some common sense. I mean, we're, you know, we've got our waters, our timber, we've got everything basically on governmental hold in California on our resources. Our, you know, talking about agriculture and whatever, you know, the waters, a dairy, for instance, has a tremendous problem getting rid of their water, tailwaters out of agriculture operations, farming operations. And then in the timber country, you know, we've got all these spotted owls and marbled murrelets and some snails and this and that, you know, there's just such a layer of bureaucracy to solve any of it. You know, it probably would be tough to apply some common sense to the coastline, you know, and solve our fiscal problems.
Common sense
might be an optimum word.
You know, the thing is, it's not just your fiscal problems, because unfortunately, you know, if California gets bailed out by the feds, it's coming out of everybody's pocket in the United States. And also, to the extent oil and gas production is not pursued, and it, you know, it could be pursued responsibly. I mean, the same federal government.
Exactly. That's my feeling too.
Yeah, I mean, the same federal government that has shut down our offshore drilling lent $2 billion to, you know, Brazil Petro, the national Brazilian oil company. It just so happens George Soros owns 50% of it. He's one of Barack's largest contributors. And they're drilling deep water down there using United States loan funds.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's a paradox here. In the meantime, the oil and gas we're not exploring for ourselves, particularly off the California coast, where it would kill a bunch of birds with one stone, solve California's financial wreck, and number two, stop any federal bailout, which would cost everybody in the United States money, and number three, add to oil production, which is going to cost everybody less at the fuel pump, are not being pursued. So, you know, government is taking a tact which seems contrary to the interests, in my opinion, not only of the citizens of California, but certainly to the, you know, the entire population of the United States. And, you know, that's one of the trends that I think people need to be most concerned about coming out of California, which is kind of a loss of sight of their part as a state in the union. You know, they're not their own country out there, or you're not your own country out there. You had some great things. I'm going to take just a minute here and remind everybody they're on with the Land Patriot. I'm Reed Rosenthal, your host. ReedLRosenthal.com and www.ranchesofthewestinc.com. Or if you'd like to pick up one of my best-selling novels, you can go to www.threadswestamericansaga.com. And I think you'll kind of enjoy the read. It's about the land, and it's about The Pioneer Spirit, and it's a six-book series that starts in 1855 and winds up with all the complexities of the modern and contemporary West, and has won several national awards and been a number one bestseller. We're also on the line with Don Rickey, a very long-time land expert and real estate broker out of the Northern California area out of Red Bluff. You can find more about Don at www.martinez.com. And we're also on the line with Billy Long, who I have known for many years. And he and his partner, Ron, have Ranch Marketing Associates. They have a number of great ranches all around the West. We've worked with them out of our realty also, and they're terrific. And why don't you give us your URL again, Billy?
RMABrokers.com, Ranch Marketing Associates, RMABrokers.com.
Super. Now, you know, when we kind of had our little break here, we were just getting into agencies. You know, how agencies, outside agencies, federal agencies, are kind of stepping on local toes, state toes, and private property toes in a whole bunch of ways, making the process much longer, making it much more expensive, which, once again, as this show demonstrates, affects everybody, whether you are in the northernmost part of Maine, the southernmost part of Florida, or the westernmost part of California. Everything that happens has an effect on everything else that happens in the country and on your pocketbook. We talked a little bit about, I wouldn't call it a funny story, but an interesting story that you ran into, Don, on what should have been a real simple project that involved steelhead. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, the river system, the coastal river system in California, has some streams that that are undammed, that have clean runs of steelhead and whatever, and they're steelhead and salmon, and they're greatly protected. And in this particular case, We had an access that had been abandoned. The bridge spanning one of these very small tributaries was outdated and needed to be replaced.
Give people a feel for how wide this creek was.
It ended up with two spans replacing bridges that were already there. One was a simple side stream tributary that goes dry in the summer, and the other was a major tributary, and it took about a 170-foot bridge. And the old bridge was above the high water mark and needed to be replaced. And the frustration of it is that so many agencies are involved that it took an entire year of due diligence just to process through the agencies to, you know, come to a common sense replacement of that bridge that was already there. And it
just out of curiosity, Don, from the original proposal that your folks made to replace, it sounds to me like everybody was in agreement the bridge needed to be replaced.
Yeah, even the agencies.
Yeah, so there was no argument on that. And then when your folks originally proposed a plan, you know, this is what we'd like to do, in the end, after a year, and, you know, how many government people worked on it? 10, 15, 20, 30?
Well, there were, visits by the various agencies probably in the 20s.
Wow.
You know, people being paid by the government. The thing that bothers me is that you know, it just there's just not a common sense approach. You know, they have to be there. They're mandated to be there. And many of them really don't need to be. You know, it's just a kind of redundant overlap system. But in this case, it hung up quite a few million dollars for an entire year, you know, to come to the same conclusion.
That's my question. I mean, from what your folks originally proposed, we all agree there has to be a bridge. This is how we'd like to build it. I mean, at the end of the year, was there any material change in what they proposed? I mean, you know, maybe they added a foot of freeboard. Maybe they added one more foot to the wing wall, which, you know, saves – a bridge structure for those of you who are listening who don't know from upstream current?
Right.
And,
well, it required quite a bit of engineering input, soils input, and that sort of thing. You know, just took an awful lot of time.
When your folks be doing that anyway? They're going to build a 170-foot bridge, which is not a cheap proposition. I mean, I've done it. Probably not that big. I think my biggest one is about 48 feet. But, it's a sizable investment. So, I mean, anybody who's putting in an investment like that, particularly if it's an access to their property, you'd think that they're going to spend the money, this goes back to your common sense, to do it right. I mean, who wants to build a bridge and have to replace it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and very good help, very bright people, very conservation-minded people wanting to do the right thing. You know, but it still took a year, you know, just to come to a conclusion that could have been done very rapidly.
Right. And then we were also talking a little bit about what's been happening with timbering, which I guess is not much out in your neck of the woods. That's not a pun.
Well, it all runs back to an overlying blanket protecting those waters. And so what used to be a simple harvest plan now involves, some of those same agencies, time and time again, inspections, they all have to be there. They all have to have their input. They all have to have their time and signed off by the scientists and, an awful lot of stuff set aside. And, the bottom line is it just so expensive to do that the economics of harvesting timber, people are just letting timber sit. There's no net in it. You know, we have to have a ripping timber market to put any net in it.
Yeah, and the bottom line is of all that, because it's being played out in many, many states from the East Coast to the West Coast, is, Sally Lou goes down to buy a couple studs to put an addition onto her house, or Joe and his wife Mary want to build a house, or whatever it happens to be. You want to replace your doors, and you're paying way more because of this type of, government interference and delay.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. Very, very frustrating. Like I say, if they're just a good common sense approach, go ahead and figure out how to protect your waters, put it in place, and go on with it, But it's so time consuming, and so many agencies involved, and all the professionals, the foresters, the foresters have their sub professionals they have to hire and whatever. It just costs an immense amount of money to start a project.
And the double ding on it is not only is this kind of delay and government fingers in the pie creating additional expenses for consumers everywhere, but those 20 people or however many that they have on a project for a year, I mean, they're all relatively high-level federal employees. They got to be G5s to G10s, so they're in that $50,000 to $100,000 a year salary range plus benefits, et cetera. And the bottom line is that we're paying for them also.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's the federal budget.
Absolutely.
We're kind of getting double dinged.
Right.
All right.
Well, it's coming to a head. This is the sort of stuff they've got to start looking at federally.
Yes, uh-huh. Absolutely. I really think it kind of it starts at the bottom, but in the end, it's the top that has to change. The last thing I want to talk about, and I know you folks don't know much about it, but in the Shenzhouquin Valley, they had a problem with a fish. And, this fish has been there forever, but suddenly the problem arose 3 years ago. And it was brought up by an environmental group. In my opinion, I haven't done enough research on it, but I plan to. It was brought up by an environmental group who really kind of wanted to see, all the farming lands, about 150,000 acres that this water source serviced, kind of return to their natural state. They're not a friend of agriculture. They're not a friend of development. They're just not a friend of commerce. And so they came up with this fish, and they came up with the concern that the fish was getting sucked into the dishes, and therefore, you know, this so-called suddenly discovered endangered species was going to be wiped out, you know, in the agricultural operations which have gone on there for, it's about 150 years, isn't it, Don?
They first started farming
about 1870,
yeah.
1880.
Yeah, middle 1800s. Yeah.
I mean, they were digging dishes with shovels. And so they cut off water to 150,000 acres. In fact, there's been special shows on it on Sean Hannity and several other networks that have done a very good job. I understand they got part of that water after 3 years going back on, but you've seen some of the effects both in almond orchards and in lands that have been abandoned yourself, haven't you, Don?
Yeah. If you, you know, the main interstate highway north and south through California is I-5, and you go down through the middle to southern San Joaquin Valley, I-5 is on the western side of the valley, so it goes right through that area that was developed and abandoned. So you're looking at, just a large landscape of dead trees and, you know, almond orchards. I think an almond orchard is 5,000 or 6,000 an acre, just development costs, just sitting there abandoned, and trees are dead, you know, forevermore.
Right, and if you folks listening at home, if you happen to be almond eaters, think about what the price of almonds was 3 years ago and what it is today. You'll find that it's close to triple. And one of the reasons is this one event in one little place, it's not little, but one specific place in California. That'll give you an idea of the impact that somebody's loss of land use, somebody's the government's tampering with land use rights has at your supermarket, wherever you're located. You know, there was also about 30,000 plus jobs lost in that valley when they shut the water off. It's my understanding. And
it's very significant. Very significant.
And it's also my understanding that the price of vegetables across the United States, because this was one of the single largest areas of production for vegetables in the United States, went up about 15%, almost overnight, when that water was shut off 3 years ago. And I'm sure many at home, if you think back, you'll remember it. You may not have wondered, you may not have figured out why when you went down to get your tomatoes, they had been, I'm taking a number, 80 cents a pound. And the next day you went down there and they were $1.05 a pound. So this is why. All right. Well, guys, this has been great. You know, it's a great insight, even on a general basis, into some anomalies that we only find in sunny California and that hopefully won't spread too far to the east.
We still got the weather, Reed.
Yeah, you definitely have the weather, and you got some pretty places.
It's 74 degrees today. It was beautiful at the beach.
But, you know, my God, if you guys ever have to start paying for the sun, you won't be able to do it. Anyway, guys, thanks very much. We've been with Don Rickey today out of Red Bluff, longtime landman and realtor up at the Northern Colorado area, www.martinez.com. And we've been with Billy Long, Ranch Marketing Associates, operate in a number of western states, including California. And, Billy, I think you're a California native, too, aren't you?
Nope. I'm a third-generation farmer from Kansas, Reed.
Are you really?
Yeah.
God, I like you even more, Billy. Anyway,
he farmed in Hollywood for a while, right?
We didn't do it.
Yeah, that's right. He did have his Hollywood stint. Anyway, yeah. Ranch Marketing Associates, great outfit. And I'm Reed Rosenthal, ReedLRosenthal.com, and www.ranchesofthewest.com. Join us next week when we talk to our guests from the southeast part of the United States on another bunch of fascinating kind of localized things that affect each and every one of us. Because remember, under all lies the land. Gentlemen, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Reed.
Thank you, Reed.
Bye.